I'm Pentti Martin, and I'm giving a presentation of example SCM service at Nokia. And this presentation is historical one. It summarizes life cycle of one SCM service, starting from the software demo to a full service with 20,000 users. It is a tool for software developers of Nokia ecosystem. It belongs to IT for R&D tool portfolio that covers 30 to 40 services in the areas of software engineering, hardware engineering, product management, and infrastructure services. This presentation is also about the history of service management and support models, starting from the time before we had ITIL, COBIT, TOCAF, or any other standardized models, the frameworks that are mostly used today. During this lecture, you could follow, firstly, the service itself. Was it successful or not? How the tool fits to tool portfolio? What are the key drivers behind the change? And what are the obstacles for change to happen? What could have been done differently? How reality meets expectations? Secondly, service management and its relation to software development. So we tackle conflicting and overlapping processes and conflicting philosophies. So in the end of the presentation, there is a discussion of waterfall and agile philosophies. Let's start from the early 2000. What kind of organization Nokia was at that time and where it was going to? Telecom companies had grown large multi-site companies. To boost marketing, local presence was required and company had offices in several countries. Also, talented workforce was needed for software development. So outsourcing and offshoring started to become more and more common. Also, it was very common to have local processes and tools. There were not good standards yet that companies could have chosen to use in company-wide level. One example of that is Nokia's own software development method, OMT++, that was created before UML. Iveroth's article summarizes well the situation from telecom organization's point of view. So future challenges were summarized to relate to four C's. So cost, control, consistency and competencies. First, the business climate changed and competition increased, so companies started to have a stronger cost focus. Secondly, the new legal control requirements, such as Sarbanes-Oxley Act, it raised a need for improving controls and global governance, and also transparency and standardization. Thirdly, because business had become global, it also required global decision making. So fast, consolidated and consistent management information was treated critical. And finally, what is needed for enabling the first three C's? So these are global technology, standard processes, and also competent staff. So how this could be possible from siloed organization to move forward? With organizational changes, targeting to global IT organization as an example. So I remember being an audience in Nokia Research Center when the plans of global IT were introduced to researchers who used to work with their own tools. So it was quite a change resistance. But researchers were not having the cost pressure. Main customers of global IT were business units, especially Nokia networks, and maybe because mobile phones made the most of the operating income at that time. I will next divide service management into three phases. Firstly, internal service model means that service level agreements were written between Nokia Global IT and Nokia business units. Nokia IT took care of governance and management, and it subcontracted development competencies from Finnish SMEs. The first direct subcontracting deal I was involved was made with Yumi Solutions from Jyväskylä, and later on we made this with Efficode, Ambientia and Reactor as examples. Contracts were fixed price and fixed content contracts, and projects were using waterfall type of development model that was common at that time. The second phase was consolidation. Nokia IT made a single contract with a larger organization that was Tieto. Tieto was a kind of hub organization that further subcontracted dedicated expertise from SMEs we used to work with earlier. That was on need basis. Also, Nokia and Siemens merged together 2007, meaning more sites around the world to be supported. So Germany, India, China were the major countries involved in R&D. IT leadership was moved to ex-Siemens organization at that time. So, back to the Tieto contract. The big contract had a cost and risk aspects, so Tieto had possibility to move support team to low-cost countries such as China, and also risk to have competent support staff was now delegated to Tieto. Tieto provided more flexibility compared to previous time of direct SME contracts. Core IT processes were in use. Development model was agile. So we learned and improved our Scrum practices. And team was very competent. So from product owner's perspective, it worked very well. The challenge was the distance between support and development teams, including time and cultural distance between China and Finland. The last phase here is real service integrator model. Atos became a major contributor to Siam model. Full deployment of ITIL version 3 model was driven by Atos. There was one attempt earlier to extend ITIL to new processes by Nokia IT, but it was discontinued. I believe it was a tactical or strategic move to wait until the service integrator model took place, so that risks can be shared or delegated to Atos in this relatively huge ITIL deployment. In the beginning, service integrator had two big responsibility in certain ITIL processes, so that processes became bureaucratical. But they slowly changed more to be more straightforward. One challenge was moving development from competent Finnish teams to teams having heterogeneous competencies in India, Wipro. In Wipro's cost structure, every project and team should have certain percent of novices. Another challenge was overlapping and confusing processes, ITIL and Agile, and those I will discuss later. The example service is iSource, that is SourceForge-based portal for sharing software assets. iSource is a web portal with simple project tools integrated to version control, like CVS and Subversion. Company had official commercial-based version control tools, such as ClearCase and Dimensions. iSource couldn't beat these commercial tools from feature point of view. So the only way to build a new service was to find such a purpose for a tool that is not yet covered in tool portfolio. The tool was first planned to be used for sharing reusable components. There were various attempts to facilitate component reuse. However, it was very challenging, especially when you know that creating components for reuse means also investments. For example, refactoring code, improving interfaces, and documenting clearly how to use the component. And if there are not many customers or users for the component, there is no pressure to create it reusable. Secondly, InnerSource. Could we use open source development best practices inside a company was a question at that time. Early experiences from InnerSource model existed, and few Nokia teams showed also interest to deploy such a model. InnerSource was kind of testbed for potential open source attempts, so testing how it works internally before deploying it into a public SourceForge.com platforms. For example, Maemo Linux phone project used also iSource for developing certain components before they were finally published for open source communities. Although iSource was not marketed as a version control tool, the service worked best in that area. Firstly, we consolidated plenty of unofficial CVS servers that were maintained by small business teams who didn't have good backup or restore solutions. Secondly, commercial tool licenses were too expensive for collaborators, and iSource was a good solution for them. And finally, I would say that when agile development came popular, interest for open source tools raised dramatically. So agile teams got continuous integration by integrating Subversion and Jenkins. Also, Java developers requested integration to Maven 2. Some of the early features were related to repository management. So we first integrated iSource to global IAM systems so that project could use existing organizational groups and got detailed and easy way to manage accesses. Also common accounts that are accounts that don't ever expire. Those were requested for Hudson and Jenkins servers use, so that continuous integration doesn't stop during summer holidays. This picture shows the highlights from the first 8 years. The iSource demo wasn't even in any server room in the beginning. But soon we moved it from Tampere office to server room at Ruoholahti, Helsinki. Then we started both service and marketing activities. We got iSource into the IT portfolio, called nowadays IT for R&D. The first service level agreement was written between Nokia Business Units and Nokia IT. Business units were divided to networks, mobile phones, multimedia and technology platforms at that time. iSource got enough wide interest, so when Nokia Siemens Networks merger happened, iSource was divided into two services, one for Nokia and one for Nokia Siemens Networks. And because this story follows me, it follows NSN part and rejoining Nokia later on. I would like to point here a few major technical improvements. So first, guaranteeing security and secure collaborator access. Nokia typically provided tool licenses for collaborators. Commercial tools were very expensive and first cost cuts were targeted to collaborators. So iSource was regarded as a good choice when for collaborator projects. Second, integrating Subversion to iSource platform was a major improvement. iSource usage started to grow gradually, first among agile projects, but later on for the whole company. The huge migrations started from Dimensions tool that was used by base station development in all, and after that also ClearCase was replaced by Subversion. Final trigger for this was benchmarking Felix Medical Systems, which used GlobalNet's Subversion solution. I was organizing this knowledge exchange as a part of European IDEA project activity. And finally, iSource got lead tool classification and became official version control tool for Nokia Siemens Networks. Migrations multiplied quickly the user base. And this leads to pressure to guarantee availability and performance. So we built a multi-site solution based on repository replication. It was master-slave replication, where you can select the master site for a repository. So in addition to Espoo, new sites like Munich, Bangalore and Beijing were able to maintain master repositories. Replication was repository-specific. In Portal, one can select the master site when creating a project and add the needed slave sites afterwards. Capacity of all sites were gradually improved by adding new nodes behind the load balancer solution, and storage utilization was continuously monitored and capacity increased when needed. Now this is an old picture from the time before Nokia Siemens Networks. You can see what servers were accessed from Nokia intranet and what servers from collaborators premises. In the beginning, collaborators didn't have access to Portal, only to CVS server. And there were two different servers for CVS, one for Nokia use only, accessible from Nokia Intranet, and the other accessible from Nokia Extranet tool. You can also see lines to separate front-end and back-end area, and these lines are firewalls. This means extra security for data located in back-end area. All support teams who worked with applications didn't have access to databases. Such separation was not anymore in NSN networks. Adding subversion into the picture means changes to firewall rules. And HTTPS to all repository servers was needed. In the beginning, both CVS and subversion software were running on the same servers, one in Intranet and one in Extranet. But later, they got their own servers. Also, change to open portal to collaborators was involved at the same time and implemented in the same release. Now back to service side. ITIL wasn't known by our team at the time of this picture, I will show soon. The picture was used as a marketing material trying to convince business units to use our global IT services. I would say that the picture works better in customer interface than showing, for example, ITIL processes. So, there was a holistic approach to services, including packaging tools, managing servers, operation support, which refers to service operations like incident and problem management, service fulfillment, capacity management and monitoring, license management, new tool evaluations and negotiations with vendors, integration and testing of services, application support, communication with business, with key users and product owners, and application-related training. Business was responsible of process training, so IT focused on application and data management. So these were the elements of every R&D tool-related service. And having global IT service, it didn't mean that it was used by all business units of a company. We used to call all business servers as hidden IT, because they were not visible in IT costs. Important part of the service, which is missing in this picture, was consolidation and data transfer from these hidden IT tools to IT services. This consolidation also is happening as planned in company mergers and acquisitions. So services are creating consolidation plans and do data migration when it's feasible. Also at the time before ITIL, relations between end users and IT were more close and personal. So typically programs had nominated key users to discuss with IT, and those persons often called directly to support teams. Service level agreement, SLA, was important also during the internal service phase. SLA was agreed between Nokia IT and Nokia business units. Nokia had a ticketing system in use to manage service requests and incident processes and metrics. Also, key users were encouraged to create tickets instead of contacting support team by email or phone. And ticketing system helped to record timestamps of tickets proceeding according to processes. The basic measures were customer satisfaction, for which data was collected from questionnaires sent to users. Service quality, various metrics. On-time delivery is measuring how well the ticket resolution times were kept. And completed service requests is followed mainly to forecast potential FTE changes. So how many full-time employees are needed for the service support. And this is used for further cost negotiations. First pass resolution of tickets is measuring how well the request was solved. Is there a need for a user to reopen the ticket? And availability and performance monitoring was built on top of Nagios and later on top of OP5. But also a few key users did their own monitoring scripts to be sure that everything was working fine. And an example, subversion commit and replication times were in the end monitored both by the service and by customers. Example service levels and targets are explained here. For incidents responding to customer, that incident is taken into investigation is 4 hours. Resolution time for critical incident is 8 hours, 20 hours for those classified high, and so on. Availability target here is 99.5%. No performance monitoring as a target. First pass resolution is 95%, so less than 5% of tickets to be reopened. Guideline for classifying incidents is in below table. So if people are unable to work, incident is classified either as first or second priority incident, depending on how many locations are affected. Whole company or several locations or one location or team. Low impact incidents are mapped from high to low resolution times. And similarly, service request targets are here categorized. For all access rights, it's 24 hours. 24 hours for configurations and data maintenance, for example, migrating data from hidden ID server to iSource is a data maintenance. 24 hours if, for example, CVS or Subversion repository gets corrupted and needs to be restored from backups. These were internal SLAs and penalty clauses were not in contracts. Escalation leading to top management discussion was the practice. Later on, monetary penalties were part of frame contracts between Tieto, Eitos and Wipro. Services were monitored and IT reported SLA results on monthly basis. One occasion metric being in red didn't typically cause a penalty. But for example, if availability was 3 months in a row lower than the target, then service provider paid something back to customer. During the hub model phase, services moved towards ITIL in core processes. ITIL is a framework for service management. It has a long history from UK government. The ITIL version 3 is a process-oriented framework, and few core service operation processes are presented in this picture. So ITIL version 3 incident management deals with incidents like failures or issues. Primary goal of the incident management process is to restore service operations as quickly as possible and to minimize impact to business operations. So best possible service availability and quality is maintained. Process management then investigates the underlying causes of incidents. It should be proactive to avoid recurrence of incidents, and that's why services should keep also known error database. Incident management is firefighting, and problem management then tries to find a guy with matches and gasoline and to stop him. Problem management may find a permanent fix, but often it results a workaround. If we use commercial solutions, external tool vendors are typically contacted to provide the permanent fix as a patch. For all cases, either workaround or permanent fix, change management process is activated. When vendor provides a patch, service team in change process is testing it and planning the change. Changes can be planned to be deployed in the next release, but workarounds are typically classified as emergency changes and deployed as soon as possible. In our Nokia case, problem and change management were not well standardized. So top level governance was missing and terminology used was local and heterogeneous. Process was based on Agile Scrum. Because the competence was on project side, typically emergency changes stopped Scrum and reprioritization was required. Release process was standardized, but it was our own. So release management process with a release checklist as tool and tool for storing release information. It was common for all R&D services, but again, it was unique to our IT for R&D. What were the changes done for problem and change management? As we knew, ITIL is coming. We used Atlassian tools Jira and Confluence to support the new processes. Altogether, we had around 40 services in IT for R&D. iSource as one of them. The changes done were first standardized ITIL-based workflows into Jira, so every support team had their own Jira project to handle problems and changes. Weekly change advisory boards organized to discuss these changes. Confluence was used as a known error database, so we got data input from Jira projects with the help of a macro plugin. And changes were classified as emergency, standard, minor and major changes, like in ITIL. We used this for 3 years, starting from 2011 until 2014. How just a change to integrate ITIL and Scrum worked in practice? I would summarize that critical services that typically had yearly projects, one starting after another. So these were still more Scrum-driven, like iSource project. Services that didn't get money for further development, so they adopted idle processes more easily. This is a picture of ITIL version 3, and that is process-oriented framework, including 26 processes categorized to 5 lifecycle phases. Each process is described using detailed workflow models, RACI matrices, and input-output tables between processes. ITIL version 3 deployment and related service tool replacement to ServiceNow were done during the year 2014. Atos worked as a service integrator and was responsible of processes, tools and related trainings for Nokia and all service vendors such as Wipro. So Atos first coordinated service strategy and design activities. The work that was also visible to me started from updating the service catalog and trying to collect the needed information for configuration management database, CMDB. Wipro didn't get a full-scale CMDB from either Nokia or earlier service vendor Tieto. Such in-depth information from services was never collected into one place. Wipro's capacity team started to work with CMDB, collecting information from old ticketing tools, Nagios monitoring system, and also service-based system documentation. Also some scanner tools to identify the software installed into servers was used. And all this pre-work was needed for ServiceNow deployment. All or most of the service operation processes were taken into use during summertime 2014. In transition phase, every process had a discussion of possible data transfer. The challenge was that the process tasks and ticket attributes didn't always match well for automatic transfer. So there was a transition period to use old and new ticketing systems in parallel. Open tickets were closed in old system and new tickets raised through the new system that is ServiceNow. The most challenging process was related to the concept of demand and demand management process deployment here, and that I will discuss next. I was working as Wipro level demand coordinator during the service integrator phase. Demand management process was planned to be used for all new development. And this means that all new features, software upgrades, and even new services should go through the demand management process. By following the guidelines, we identified that such stuff that are approximately described in EPICS level in product backlogs should go through the demand management process. The outcome of demand management process is mainly a feasibility study. During the process, Nokia was creating first business analyses and software vendors were creating then technical analyses. That is a solution proposal with effort estimation. Demands were either approved or disapproved by Nokia then. In optimal case, approved demands could have been taken into backlog, business analysis giving the priority. Further, the idea was that approved demands form a content for new projects. Minor features could go directly to change process. But in practice, we noticed that granularity of demands were too small and technical analyses were written in too detailed level. Investigation work, typically done iteratively in agile sprints, was moved to a pre-project task done in waterfall manner. In the end, we agreed to raise the granularity level so that project content is summarized in one or few demands only. Delivery times for demands are rather long in relation to problems or changes. As ServiceNow was the primary system for ITIL content, all demands from previous systems were planned to be moved to ServiceNow. Services didn't know what exactly the demand concept mean. Together we identified demands from Jira backlogs by tagging them for later filtering and data transfer. Tagging was done based on intuition. Data transfer took place in November 2014, few months after the core processes. Because process was totally different, demands were mapped only into the first phase of demand management process or for approval phase. Third challenge was realized later when Nokia started to follow demand delivery times. Certain services had a reservation of not so urgent features for next 2 or 3 years in their backlogs. So keeping them open in demand process started to impact metrics. So demand cleanup activities started. What about resolving and closing demands for potential reopening later on? This nice idea, but it was also against the other metrics first pass resolution. There wasn't any official place to maintain ideas and nice to have features. Of course, unofficially, they were kept in Jira backlogs. To summarize, integrating ITIL and Agile words caused a lot of headache because people on development and governance side were having their own different targets. Recently, ITIL has gone through a dramatic change from processes to capabilities. Full-scale processes with workflow diagrams, RACI matrices, and input-output tables have been thrown away. Also, the idea of best practice that fits to all organizations has been left out and replaced by generic guiding principles shown here. All these ITIL version 4 guiding principles are familiar from Agile, Lean and DevOps. In some extent, ITIL version 4 reminds me Safe Framework because the focus is on value and value chains. In Nokia case, with these principles, we may not have ended up to integration of demand management process with Agile Scrum development. I will end my presentation to a comparison of ITIL version 4 and Agile manifesto principles. You can identify the similarities. It took almost 20 years from ITIL to become Agile. Only one ITIL principle is not fitting well into the original manifesto principles. That is optimize and automate. If Agile manifesto is created today, I believe it would include fifth DevOps-related principle. In the beginning, I mentioned that you could follow the example service, iSource, its success and obstacles, and changes happening in the service management side. So, was the iSource service successful? For the first years, we didn't have a sense of urgency and powerful coalition like the famous Kotter's change model is suggesting. Agile movement had their own burning platform, and agile methods were more appealing and successful than any InnerSource-related activities. So, for the original purpose, service wasn't successful. As a version control tool, user growth started slowly with the help of bottom-up interests of individual teams. In the end, iSource became a lead tool thanks to a top-down decision, so powerful coalition was found rather late, 10 years from the demo. Service was successful, but not with its original goal. Then, how the service management and governance changed on the way. Agile development worked best in the end of hub model phase, I would say. Although we made good preparations for service management processes during that time, the full IDEL version 3 deployment created confusion for us, for both service vendors and the customer. Atos focused on improving service integration model that was later standardized and called as SIAM model. Confusion was mainly because of overlapping waterfall and agile philosophies of IDEL and Scrum. IDEL-based demand and change management processes were mandatory ones, but to get development running, you should have used Scrum in projects. Start where you are, keep it simple and practical in the context of IDEL, so I would say that they are very welcome based on this example.